GAA on Off the Ball.
Well then, welcome along to the show. Dublin fans feeling very good about life. 5 in a row and a 3 in a row makes a nice weekend's work. In this first hour, we'll bring you a reaction from Jim Gavin, from Mick Bowen, from several of the players as well. Plus, we will have analysis very shortly from Billy Joe Padden and Aaron Kernan. And then Cliona O'Connor will join us as well. On the rugby front, injury woes suddenly for Ireland in the shape of Robbie Henshaw and Rob Kearney. Gary Ringrose may be sprung all of a sudden. We'll talk to Craig Ray as well in Cape Town, the spectre of doping casting a shadow over Springbok preparations. Rory O'Connor will join us from Japan with the latest on Henshaw and Kearney. And then the football show, Pat Nevin with us. Man City lose to Norwich in fairly dramatic circumstances. And then Stephen Kelly alongside Stephen Doyle at the Arsenal game yesterday. Their thoughts at full time to come after 9. We'll start with the weekend that was for Dublin. Very happy times. Dublin 118, Kerry 15 points on the Saturday evening. Jim Gavin in his press conference was in, by all accounts, very good form, very effusive form, open. His father was sitting in the room as well. He was relaxed, he was happy. People wondered, did this mean it was the end for Jim Gavin? He said he'd be reflecting on that over the coming days. But certainly he was summing things up in the moment, especially those sweet moments together in the dressing room at full time.
They're the moments that you really treasure, is because you won't be back together in that environment. Yeah, you go back tonight to the hotel, but there's obviously the mums and dads are there, and that's you can blame them because they nurtured and influenced these men to be who they are. So a lot of distractions. The medal presentation, there's always players, you know, somebody's always at work or is abroad at work. So it's the last time you'd be together. That's like it being able to kind of reach out and connect with each other, and just us and the management team, the back room, and everybody together. So yeah, it is, they are special, and I can, without hesitation, remember each and every one of the, it's probably 6 times we've been with them after an All Ireland final to be with them. Yeah, they are special moments. Yeah, I look forward to it.
I'm sure they do. It looked like fun at full time in the pitch, that's for sure. Gavin on Saturday as well was also talking about Stephen Cluxton. He's the only player, certainly he's out on his own as he's played the most games of anyone in the squad across the 5 in a row. It's his 7th All-Ireland in total. Jim Gavin on Saturday in the press conference, obviously a big, big fan of Stephen Cluxton.
That's the result of hundreds of hours on the pitch. I've seen that, if you look back in his stance, I've seen that. That's not the first time I've seen that. And Josh Moran, his goalkeeping coach, and the goalkeeping coaches that have worked with him deserve credit for that. So that's something that you see replicated. You know, I saw it earlier on this week. I saw it on the day after the replay. Him spending 2 hours on the pitch with Evan coming for the goalkeeper and Michael Shields from Sylvester's. The three of them with the goalkeeping coach working on trying to rectify his positioning for Keenan Spillane's goal in the first game. So that's somebody who's dedicated to their craft, and the result of that is what you see in those clutch moments, from have that composure to make himself big and strong and, you know, just do his job, which that's what Stephen does. He does his job. As I said, that's somebody who is who's a master of his craft. Yeah. Through that example, he inspires people around him. That's, you know, Stephen is well able to talk. And he's very articulate and people listen, but how he demonstrates, I suppose, his actions, that's what I'm interested in. That's what he does. He's a doer.
Yeah, he sure is, and he's still doing it. So that was Jim Gavin at full time on the Saturday. Then yesterday, Jack McCaffrey spoke to the media. This was outside Crumlin Hospital, and he was reflecting on that experience. He's a doctor by profession as well. But he was reflecting on what it was like to go into Crumlin the morning after the All-Ireland final, and then you'll hear his thoughts as well. He was asked about his feelings at the final whistle. But first of all, what it was like going to Temple Street and Crumlin yesterday morning.
To start off with, coming here to Crumlin and heading over to Temple Street now is one of the greatest honours I've ever had in my life. And you walk in, you see kids were sick and families were on a tough journey a lot. And to see the joy that us playing football gives them is astounding. And rather than diminishing, some people say, look, it puts things into perspective, football doesn't really matter. No, it absolutely highlights how much sport matters and how special what we've managed to do is. And to see the release and the satisfaction that some of these guys get from it is it's really emotional. The other thing you asked me about was the kind of final whistle and the moments after it. You know, I suppose the overall permeating emotion is relief, and you kind of have these individual little meetings on the pitch where you keep bumping into the lads and the various members of the management team, and you see people in the crowd and all that, and it's something that unfortunately you can't really take stock of at the time, and it'll take the next couple of weeks for it to hit home, but memories will cherish forever.
Yeah, Jack McCaffrey there, he's a smart cookie on a host of levels. I was reading in the Irish Times that Ina Reardon was making the point that he's been working in the paediatric unit in Our Lady of Lourdes in Drogheda, and he's in Temple Street now, long hours. He even missed Dublin's first training session after the drawn game. So he's managing to juggle seriously successful career as well as what he's doing on the pitch, which is quite phenomenal too. So that's McCaffrey. Brian Howard then, he's had a brilliant season, was great in the drawn game as well, one of the real standard players, and in that first half against Mayo when not many Dublin players were playing well. So Brian Howard has now done the three in a row, like quite a few players in this team. He doesn't feel he's done the five in a row, and there's plenty of hunger still there.
I know when I was a kid, that's what I dreamt of, and to be able to play two in 2 weeks, I know some people are probably like, the last one because it was a job, but I was more excited now because I knew what we had to do, and we knew going into this game that we wanted to win, obviously, and what we had to do, and to put the wrongs right from the last game, and thankfully we did that.
What was the buzz like when the final whistle blew and you knew what you'd done?
I don't think... Obviously, the five in a row, it's huge and it's an amazing achievement, but once the whistle went, I think it was just a sense of relief for 2019's All-Ireland, because when we met back up in January, that was our main goal to win it this year. And regardless of the five in a row, we knew the significance behind this year, but we knew going in that we just needed to do our job, and hopefully that was going to be enough, and thankfully it was.
And lastly, you've said the words five in a row a couple of times there. They weren't words you guys used too much in the build-up, but when you're older, you might have kids, you might have grandkids. Is it something you look back on and go, I was part of that team that made that five history?
Yeah, and it's a huge honour to be involved, but we know, speaking on behalf of a lot of the younger lads and even some of the other lads that are sticking around, that we don't want to stop here, we want to keep going, and we're hungrier than ever, because personally this is my third, so I'd like to make my own five in a row, so that's what we're going to hopefully do.
Yeah, Brian Howard there, he's not stopping anytime soon. And then Philly McMahon, who did come on and has done the five in a row, here were his thoughts.
It kind of feels similar to the last couple of years, but it's obviously nice having it on a Saturday, winning the All-Ireland on a Saturday and having a Sunday. Getting down to see the kids in the hospitals is really important to us, and you know, giving them a bit of happiness and the smile on their face is very important.
Your own role in the match yesterday, a bit different to previous years when maybe you would have started. How did you find that? I know you said after the game yesterday that you wished the game went on longer so you could have played longer.
Definitely, yeah. Like I missed the Mayo game and I missed the Kerry, the first game. So, you know, going in at that time of the game where it was in the melting pot is quite tough. And marking a guy like Walsh, who's played a good bit. So, yeah, no, it was intense. It was exactly the way you want it. And as I said, I'd love to play a little bit longer, but we got over the line at the end.
Is the winning feeling at the end any different to each final that you've won in the last 5-6 years?
Yeah, definitely. As you get older in your career, definitely it is. You know, you don't know when the last one's going to be. So it's not that it's 4 or 5 in a row or whatever it is. It's just that you've won an All-Ireland and you've got over the line.
Philly, congrats. Well done.
Thanks, Amy.
So there he is. He's been on the road a long time and still going. Philly McMahon. Dublin 118, Kerry 15 points. We have Aaron Kernan with us and Billy Joe Padden as well. You're there, lads?
We are indeed.
I am.
Good. Billy Joe, sometimes in life you can second guess your instinct and overthink things, and often your instinct is right. And the immediate reaction I suspect everyone had after the drawn game against Kerry was that Kerry had blown their chance. And so it transpired, because really, from 17 seconds in when Conor Callaghan kicks that point and sets the tone for the afternoon, Dublin were just much, much better.
They were. And I think, I don't like to use the word, you know, that they blew their chance, because I think even Dublin, with 14 men like they were for the majority of that drawn game, they're still a very, very efficient football team, and they can do many things very well, and they're still very, very difficult to beat. But you're right, that was the opportunity for Kerry, this Kerry team, And opportunities like that don't come around too often. You know, you don't win five in a row without being incredibly consistent. And many of the Dublin players that day were slightly off it. And then you saw them rebound, as you knew they would, really quickly in this game on Saturday. Whether it was Conor Callaghan, Paul Mannion, Kieran Kilkenny for me was the one that stood out in those early stages. And that they, there was a real zest to the way they were playing, moving the ball around. None of the wild sort of shots from difficult angles like you'd seen maybe in the drawn game. Much more composed. Obviously, Jim Gavin had focused on that in the time in between the games. And they were just that clinical, efficient team that just are so hard to live with. And to Kerry's credit, I think Kerry showed amazing mental strength and no shortage of skill for some of their standout performers, Ganey and Clifford in particular, to be able to hang with this Dublin team for as long as they did was an excellent achievement, in my opinion, as well.
Yeah, Kerry, you have to give them huge credit, Aaron, because Dublin just started unbelievably. 5 points in 5 minutes, no wides. It was just relentless. I know Mannion dropped a couple short, but ultimately it was the second half before Dublin had a wide. 10 points from playing that first half. I think there was one stat that after 25 minutes, it was 9-7. 16 scores, 15 of them had come from play. So Kerry, you know, matched them as much as any team could hope to. And crucially, from 5-1 down, they went in at the break 10 points apiece, which showed a fair amount of resilience on Kerry's part. And then even after the Merchant goal, they did manage to get back to within a point, Kerry. So they never really went away. This was never totally done until towards the end. So they actually did really well to hang in there in some respects.
They did indeed, and that happened over the 2 days. I have to say, like, I was fearful. I think we all were looking for a great game second day out. But from the start, I was fearful that it was going to run away. But like, you couldn't but be impressed with how well Kerry dug in and the scores that they picked off. You know, I think a lot of the talk after the first game was about the amount of improvement that there was in Dublin, and particularly some of their key players. And in fairness, they all did deliver. But I think from a Kerry perspective also, I don't think Paul Ganey, David Clifford in particular, would have been happy with how they performed. And I think they showed their true worth again whenever it mattered most. And particularly those two in the first half were instrumental in getting scores on the board. And, you know, Clifford looked more pumped up than what I ever have seen him. But yeah, to their credit, over the two games, they never quit, that Kerry team. I think, you know, and it's not a patronising thing at all, but I think they probably did, whenever you look at it, surpass expectations in terms of how young they are, but yet how they are able to go with the greatest team that has ever played their games for 2 days and never, you know, so never give in, never accept defeat. You know, and I think that is hugely positive from a Kerry perspective, in that I'm fairly of the belief that I think we've just seen the start of what is going to be a decade or so of quality clashes against these two counties again.
Billy Joe, Owen Merchant came in. That was the big change from a Dublin point of view. What else changed in their general play? What do they do differently here?
Well, I think, as I've mentioned, they were much more composed on possession. But I think bringing Merchant in and bringing Johnny Cooper a bit further out the field, what it had taken McCauley out of it, no disrespect to Michael Dara, he's been, you know, he's a very physical player, but you're bringing two very different players into that middle third. And you bring a lot more energy, a lot more ball carrying ability. And I think they were some of the things that Dublin did very, very well in those early stages when Kerry were looking to be very, very direct. And I think that was an error. I think that allowed Dublin to, you know, win the possession in their full back line. And instead of the play being stopped and maybe having to reset from a kick out, which Kerry had proven in the drawn game they did very well, that you allowed Johnny Cooper, Merchant, to bring the ball out. They carry the ball through the middle third. They got it in, you know, Fintan was involved in that. They got it in into their forwards in good positions. And that was a key factor for me in terms of Dublin racing into that 5-1 lead and getting many of those forwards that had played poorly in the drawn game into their stride. And maybe if Kerry were able to hold on to possession, were a bit more cagey in those early stages, be less aggressive in terms of trying to hurt Dublin straight away, well, then you might have seen some of the Dublin players start to doubt themselves if they hadn't got on the scoreboard in the first 20-25 minutes. But as it happened, each of those forwards, Mannion, O'Callaghan, Kilkenny, all got the perfect starts that you'd wanted and were up and running really, really early.
Like, in some respects, it's hard to argue, Billy Joe, with the team saying, let's test this full back line, let's see where they are, we might get some joy. Maybe with Tommy Walsh there, it might have been a better plan. In some respects, it's hard to criticise a team for having a pop like that, but it was a departure certainly from what they did in the drawn game, where they did, particularly in the early stages, stay very patient in possession, keep the ball, settle things down, bring each other into the game a little bit, get a few touches. That was a definite departure.
Definitely, and but we've been talking about this before, whether it was games between Kerry and Dublin in the drawn game or Mayo and Dublin previously. If you're going to challenge Dublin into the latter stages of the game, you have to frustrate them early on. You have to hold on to possession because, as I always said, it's an energy conservation tactic as much as anything else. It keeps the ball out of their star players' hands and maybe they get a bit frustrated. But playing one of those long balls in early was no problem, but I think there was about four or five in a very short space of time and they didn't even go out for a wide. It would have nearly been better if there were wides kicked. But the ball was stayed in play. Cluxton did very well on some of those high balls. They knocked them out and, you know, Merchant did well diving on a ball in that area and then they brought the ball out really quickly. And I think that you're right. If Tommy Walsh had been started, you could see, well, this is an aggressive tactic, but it's probably the right tactic because he's such a good ball winner. But without him there, I think it was a risk too much to take in those early stages. And maybe if they hadn't been having to press so hard in the latter stages or the middle section of that first half just to stay in the game, because as Aaron points out, we were all afraid that it might run away from them, that maybe they would have had a bit more energy in the last 10 because they did look tired at that stage.
Yeah, what were your thoughts, Aaron, as you watched Kerry launch a few in high?
To be honest, I didn't have a problem with it at all because you say it was game of them. It obviously was a tactic. It was something that they had planned to do. My only, I suppose, difficulty with it is if you're going to go long, what was different from the first day was they always had an outlet in the half forward lane in day one, which was particularly Sean O'Shea. Give James McCarthy an awful hard time, but once Sean O'Shea got the ball, he was always in the 45-metre lane. And that's where he was able to give that quality pass to the inside lane that we're used to seeing from Kerry. The problem here was there's two issues. Number one was the ball was never been kicked from the 45. It was been kicked from nearly midfield, which meant that it was too easy to read from a Dublin perspective. You know, after the first one then, like that flight of a ball might take 3 or 4 seconds. Any quality player who's switched on, he'll cover that ground that needs to be underneath a break. And that's what Johnny Cooper, Owen Murchin were doing really well. But secondly, it was always nearly an isolated Kerry player where if you're going to go route one, right, you have your target man who Paul Geaney has excellent hands. Mm. Clifford had a height advantage there. But if you're going route one, the two corner forwards need to be hoovering up underneath the breaks as well, where it was always one Kerry forward with the first three men to him was always Dublin defenders. So that was the only thing. Maybe players just didn't concentrate on what they were supposed to do whenever, you know, in terms of your two inside corner forwards. But I was just surprised that when going route one, it wasn't coming from a bit closer to goals. And then also there wasn't the support around the foot of whoever it was that was contesting that ball from a Kerry point of view. Because all it would have took was one of them to come off. And, you know, we definitely had game on our hands. But I would definitely say I'm not sure Kerry rue as much that they went that route. I would say it's probably they just didn't have enough men in dangerous positions to pick up the breaks and that Dublin were able to build so easily. That's something that I definitely think that they will regret.
Yeah, be very interesting in the coming days or weeks when some players pop in for a chat, whether or not that was very much the plan to try and do that in the first couple of minutes, or if Dublin's brilliant start almost spooked them. And I guess we'll have to find out the answer to that. The role of Paul Murphy's been talked about as well, Billy Joe. So, it's tied in with two things. One, they didn't seem to press Dublin on the kickouts the same way they did in the drawn game. And then Murphy spent a bit of time as a sweeper, which certainly allowed Cooper come up the field and Merchant come up the field. Like, there were a number of instances. You think of even Davy Byrne's shot in the first half and Murphy standing there about 15 metres away from him in no man's land. It was, you know, he kind of got caught in no man's land to an extent. Didn't affect shots from outside, didn't get in Mannion's face when he was kicking them or Kilkenny's face at times. Like, did that work? How did that differ from what they did the first day?
No, I don't think it worked. I think what they did the first day worked well was that aggressive nature. It was being able to press. All right, it was risky and they got caught out, particularly for the McCaffrey goal with an excellent work move from Cluxton and kick out. But I think when you're playing sweeper and Paul Murphy's an excellent footballer, it's going to be very hard to do it effectively against the way the Dublin forwards played on Saturday. For the simple reason that they were winning the ball so wide, they all have great one-on-one ability that they can work their way out of a one-on-one situation. And I think some of those scores that came in the early stages were maybe where Mannion and O'Callaghan combined combined with Kilkenny, worked the ball into a really good shooting position and knocked the ball over. In that situation, the sweeper is not really any use to you unless he can cut out the initial ball. Mm. If he can't do that, then it's all about getting your tackles in and getting bodies back and filtering them and pushing them out beyond the 45 and getting as many numbers as you can in there to kind of make them go left to right. And Paul Murphy and some of his colleagues were not able to put enough pressure on the Dublin combinations to actually push them out the field. And you saw Kieran Kilkenny kick one over from 21 yards out slightly to the left, where they'd worked it in really well. And that was the difficulty they were going to have. And I think that, you know, when Kerry found themselves then in the 10 minutes into the second half, where you knew that they were just going to have to get more scores, as it finished, I think Dublin had 8 scores, Kerry had only 4. They really probably had to throw caution to the wind a bit more in that regard and try and push up and play a bit more man-on-man, because Merchant, as you said, Merchant and Cooper in those early stages just carried too much ball freely up the field.
Yeah. Did the McCaffrey goal spook them, Aaron? Is that your reading of it?
I think it is. Again, you would have to get chatting to someone who was involved within the Kerry camp, but I would think that that was, you know, really what changed it for them. But for me, like, I thought it was so admirable what they were doing day one, you know. And yeah, they were called for 1-1, 1-2, whatever it was, but they still drew a game doing something that I felt they could have even got more confident at and they could have got better at. Like, I thought there was aspects of the McCaffrey goal that they could have fixed, you know, and they had 2 weeks to work on it. But I was just very surprised that they didn't go. I assumed that what they did in the first half, I was sitting with a friend of mine from home here, and we said, geez, I think they're going to go now to full press the second half. They're really going to go for this. But to be fair, I actually was disappointed that they didn't go for it, because I just think it was bullish of them. And I think it got their whole support behind them as well. I think it really made a contest of the day that everyone knew, like, they're here, they mean business, they're not taking a backward step. And I think Dublin ended up winning 23 of their 25 kickouts. You know, and we just didn't see the turnovers from Jack Barry, David Moran, which was giving the Kerry players and supporters a huge lift. And for me, it was another aspect that maybe whenever they look back, and that they didn't back themselves, because definitely they have the personnel to cause issues. You know, from competing in the air and having the athleticism around the middle of the field to cause Dublin issues.
Yeah. Psychology is all important here, Billy Joe. I was half wondering if they approached the first game with the sense of not abandon, but like, we got to throw everything at Dublin here. We've nothing to lose here. And then suddenly you draw with them and you very easily could have won the game. Do you think, oh, we're more in this than we even realise, let's just try and protect a little bit? And maybe that crept into their thinking. Again, it's hard to know, but it had been so successful in the first game. It had created an atmosphere in the stadium that was never quite there in the second game.
That's right. And I'm sure that, you know, in the Kerry camp, they, you know, they would have been trying to guard against that. But there's no doubt when you're a Kerry player coming away from that, and maybe particularly the younger players, and their first experience of an All-Ireland final against that quality of an opposition. And when you go back to Kerry and you think about how well you'd played, how much effort you'd put into it, and then you played against 14 men and you still didn't win. And you probably get those examples like the McCaffrey goal and a couple of those counter-attacks that Dublin were still able to put together in the drawn game are shown to you on the video analysis. There's no doubt that you probably are going to get a bit cautious, and it will be in the back of your mind. And it's very hard have that instant memory loss that, like, all great athletes need to have after they've maybe made a mistake or been caught out. But I think in the long term, Kerry will be able to rationalise that over the winter months and know what they have for the future. And they have the mental strength. They show that in both games, that they can react and they're tough enough to stick in it in a game against Dublin, because they didn't really buckle. It was just a case at this stage that Dublin just had, you know, too many outstanding performers, you know, throughout that game.
Yeah, it is almost remiss of us to be talking about what Kerry could have done, Aaron, and how things changed. It doesn't need analysis, really, because we could all see it with our own eyes, but the quality of Dublin forward play at times on Saturday was just a joy to watch. Some of the shot taking, there was just something mesmeric about it. Like, it was kind of thrilling even watching on TV, the stadium. especially that 5-1 lead, you know, the way they put those points together, it was just so sharp and brilliant. You know, like, they were a joy to watch when they were on, and you've got Conn, Mannion, Kilkenny weighing in with 12 points, 4 each from play. It's just devastating.
It is, and to be fair, like I say, I was there as a neutral, and you're looking to see a great contest, and even though it luckily was run away at that stage, you couldn't but be impressed with the Dubs. And that was my fear, was all the talk was about Kerry and how well they played and how their matchups all worked and how they nullified so many of the Dublin players. But like, this Dublin team was going for 5 in a row. Yeah. You know, they're used to nothing but winning. Their mindset, their psyche within those players was, I'd say that replay couldn't come quick enough, because they needed to prove a point. Like, everyone all of a sudden had forgot how good they were, forgot that they'd done 4 in a row. Not that they'd forgot, like, but you know, they nearly were. We were questioning, we're thinking, are they able to do it? Like, Kerry have really put it up to them now. So they were out to prove a point, and there's no doubt that they did that. You say, just kick 12 points from play between 3 men in an All-Ireland final. Yeah. It's absolutely outstanding. Like, I go back to, I suppose, my own county only ever won one, and their full forward line on that day, all 3 of them kicked 3 points in play, Stephen McDonald, Ronan Clark, Jamard Myers, and that went a long way to Armagh winning that All-Ireland. But for these boys to do it, with the pressure that they had on them, the 5 in a row hanging over them, a poor performance beforehand, they were just out. And I know you talk about probably all the time these processes and that there. They knew that they didn't perform the first day, and they knew exactly what they were going to do, how they were going to rectify it. And I think just a slight part of the conversation earlier is what they do really well, and I think we've seen it in their game since that All-Ireland semi-final against Tyrone a couple of years ago, is they don't, maybe bar Conn, they don't take the ball into contact. So the ball is constantly moving, which is why if the sweeper doesn't intercept the first ball, he doesn't even get to tackle anybody, because the ball's moved quickly before anyone even comes in to get pressure on. It's popped off. There's always an option, and then there's always someone coming in and off the wing on the loop to get a shot off. And that's what Dean Rock got his 2 points on. That's the points that you're talking about. Kieran Kilkenny, Paul Mannion coming off the wing. Conn, in fairness, he'll just run through you, run over you, do whatever. But the other boys are always options, coming running at different angles. And that's what makes them so hard to handle, is that you just don't know what angle they're going to come at. And right and left foot, they're absolutely lethal. And to be fair, like, these boys have just done 5 in a row. They've done something that has never been done in our games. They've done something that even at the start of this year, I didn't have a reason why, but I just said, they can't do it. 5 in a row can't be done for a reason. But these boys are after doing it, so you know, you can't but admire them. It's absolutely awesome what they've achieved.
It's true. And you referenced them keeping possession there, like the second half, 3 minutes at one point they kept the ball, 35 passes for that Mannion point. And there were a few other instances as well where they just owned the ball and decided they were going to do that. So they can play it whatever way you want.
But how many times would you see somebody taking that into contact and eventually getting turned over? Yeah. Everybody does.
Yeah.
At some stage, you'll think, we have to try something here. We listened. The crowd was booing a bit. They don't care about what's going on around them. They just were literally going through the motions as it was planned out from them. And like, that is so impressive. Like, to say, if you could keep a ball if you're playing around your own defence and a team has dropped 15 men behind the ball, but to be doing it from midfield forward, trying to probe from side to side, and then to end up getting a score like they did, it was absolutely fantastic. It was a killer for Kerry. But for them to have the ability to execute that was absolutely top class.
So I want to get your thoughts on the future. And obviously there are certain unknowables. Stephen Cluxton did a lap of honour. It was hard to know if that's just because he's won a 5 in a row or if that's a bit of a farewell. We'll find out. Jim Gavin, similarly, by all accounts, he was far more open in the post-match press conference than he often is after winning these All-Irelands. Like, even, you know, talking about Cluxton, his dad was at the back of the room. On the own Merchant goal, he admitted that that was like a set-piece play. Even though Moran fisted the ball, once Merchant got it, they went into set-piece mode. This would have been rehearsed. Everybody knew exactly what they were going to do to open out the space. They're the kind of tidbits he mightn't ordinarily give away, which led, admittedly, we're stretching a bit, led people to wonder if, well, that's because the pressure's now off and he's done. We'll find that out. So I know the likes of Cluxton and Gavin and other retirees are part of the answer to this question, but people have said, like, the future is Kerry's, they're going to win All-Irelands. And that was very much the feeling, Billy Joe, after the drawn game. Then you watch Dublin come out and beat them ultimately by 6 points and win well. And hey, maybe they could have won more if they really had to push themselves. Do you now look at the gap between Kerry and Dublin and think this is really, really tight and Kerry absolutely go into next year with a massive chance? Or are you saying Dublin really clear six in a row favourites.
They're clear six in a row favourites, but there's no doubt that Kerry got a lot closer to Dublin than I thought they would. And there's a lot of improvement in that Kerry team, and I feel they are going to improve. Now, whether they'll have enough to dethrone Dublin next year, I'm not sure. But they've made significant strides. They've got closer to... They have, you know, improved more maybe than Dublin have over this calendar year. But at the same time, it's hard to see. I don't think there's any evidence that Dublin are stepping back in level. I think that Jim Gavin, maybe my own opinion on his openness after the game was that I think he's that ambitious that after winning two in a row, he probably saw the talent that he had in that dressing room every night training and realised this team is good enough to go and win five in a row to be the best team that ever played Gaelic football. And I think that sense of achievement maybe has resulted in him being a bit more casual with the media. But I don't know personally, or haven't heard any rumours, but I don't see any reason why he should retire, you know, pack it in, unless if there's personal reasons. Because I was quite critical of him in the drawing game. I thought he had a bad day at the office. I think those comments are fair, but you have to hand it to him that when the team played with this sort of, you know, they were really nerveless throughout this, and they could have got bogged down on the pressure of the drive for five. Mm. And even at half time, Dublin had played so well, they still were only level. You know, they could have panicked at that stage, but he never did. He held firm, and they were really, really impressive. But I still think that many of these Dublin players have so many things to offer. I think one of the greatest things that Jim Gavin has done is that the way he's been able to alternate leadership roles within the squad. It's, you know, for a time it probably was, you know, certain players, Bernard Brogan, maybe, you know, Conley, Kevin McMinimum, you know, even Philly. But now it's Kilkenny, Fenton, Mannion, Cooper, these sort of players. The one constant in all of this has been Tuxton. And I think that if Tuxton decides to go, he shouldn't, because this year was probably the best year, in my opinion, that he's had. He probably was the most consistent performer over the two All-Ireland finals that we saw. He was probably the only player that had exceptional outings in both games. He was really, really brilliant. So if he feels, if he can go on, he would be a huge factor in Dublin winning All-Ireland again next year, in my opinion. Now, if he were to decide to retire, I think that's such a huge hole in the Dublin dressing room in terms of what he sets in terms of the culture in there. You know, it's all about the team. There's none of them is preoccupied with any other sort of sidetracked by anything. And then you can't take away what he does on the field. That ability with the way he kicks the ball out, his decisiveness on high balls, just the speed that he moves the play along, I think that is going to be exceptionally hard for any goalkeeper to wear that number one jersey after him.
Mm. Aaron, under a minute if you could, we're just going against the clock. Are Dublin fairly comfortably clear for next year? You didn't think they'd do five in a row, so you really need to get thinking here. But based on what you saw, Kerry Dublin, like, are you kind of thinking this is still a couple of years away yet before Kerry are really putting Dublin to the sword?
No, I think the improvements that Kerry made this year was enormous. You know, I didn't see them getting that close. And I think if you pick one player, if you pick Conn O'Callaghan 2-3 years ago, whenever he just started out, how good he was. But look at him now. You know, so Sean O'Shea last year, I was in Clonus and sort of bullied by Monaghan players, hitting them off the ball before the game started. I seen him going toe-to-toe with anyone who come near him. John Small, James McCarthy, in the biggest stage of all, you know, and that's 12 months. Give him another 12 months. Give that entire squad. They have a squad full of Conn O'Callaghans who will physically develop. So I think the gap will close even more next year. My big fear for Kerry ultimately closing it or staying at the top long term will be, I was sitting watching Mark O'Connor playing for Geelong on Saturday morning in the AFL. He's the man that they needed to replace David Moran in terms of just that midfield powerhouse. You know, so he has been a huge loss. He's going well over there. Doesn't look like he's coming back anytime soon. So he could have been a key personnel who could have helped to swing the balance in their favour sooner rather than later. But I think it's definitely Dublin for six in a row next year. But I think Kerry will close the gap even more because just physically and the just a mental maturity, they'll be that bit closer. But yeah, if Cluxton and Jim Gavin goes, the whole thing blows wide open.
Okay, brilliant analysis, lads. Thanks so much.
Take care.
No problem, Joe.
Billy Joe Padden, Aaron Kernan there giving us their thoughts. By the way, we will come back to the breaking news today in GAA this afternoon, and it is significant. So essentially on Saturday, the GAA's ruling Central Council sat down to come up with plans for the championship structures for next year. And basically what they've come up with is the following. So they're going to vote on this in about a month at Páirc Uí Chaoimh in October. They're going to vote on this. In 2020, the plan would be that only teams from Division 1 and Division 2 of the league would be eligible for the All-Ireland qualifiers. So if you lose a game, if you're in Division 1 and Division 2, you go into the qualifiers. If you're from one of the lower divisions, then you go into a Tier 2 championship, which would be run on a straight knockout basis. And if you obviously are in Division 3 or Division 4 and you win a few games and you get to your provincial final, then you do qualify for the Tier 1 qualifier route. But you have to get to a provincial final before that. Otherwise, you're going down into a Tier 2 championship. So everybody starts off in the championship. But if you lose a game and you're in Division 3 or 4, then you fall into Tier 2. If you are Division 1 or Division 2, then you go into the qualifiers. And it would mean, by the way, only two full rounds of the qualifiers in future as opposed to the current four rounds. Now, interestingly, 2019 as an example, only Division 1 and Division 2 teams reached provincial finals this year. That's just one sample size, 1 year sample size. We'll talk about that over the week at some stage, but that was the news this afternoon in case you missed it. That is the men done with. 56,000 watched Dublin complete the three in a row yesterday. We're going to talk about that next. GAA on Off the Ball. Now, welcome back. So our next guest is an All-Ireland winner with the Dublin senior football team back in 2010. She was captain of the county as well, and she was named in the TG Carr Team of the Decade 2000 to 2010. Cliona O'Connor is on the line, and she watched Dublin complete the three in a row. Evening, Cliona.
How are you? How are you?
Very well. I know you were there for us yesterday. We were checking in with you and Mór Tuairis across the afternoon. It's a brilliant achievement. If you had told Mick Bowen and his team beforehand you're only going to score 2-3 today, they would have been damn worried.
Absolutely. You know, as the first half was progressing and you're looking down the pitch, I'm like, oh my God, it's 20 minutes in the game and nobody has scored. So you're getting worried, one, for the quality of the game, but also, you know, nobody's getting ahead. And it was a very strange game in that sense, but scores are so hard to come by. And from a Dublin perspective, they got the goals, which were the difference. You know, it's five scores to four scores, really, but Dublin happened to get their boot on the end of two balls, and they neither of the goals were pretty, but they were the game changers, I guess.
2-3 to 4 points was the final score for people who didn't catch it. So in the end, it was a 5-point gap. It was 22 minutes gone before Sinead Goldrigg's goal. So 22 minutes with no score. It was weird. Like, it was just a weird game. Conditions obviously were bad, that much I know. And it was kind of absorbing, like there was a tension kind of creeping into it. There was incredible physicality, both sides. Some of the tackles were brilliant, conditions were woeful. And then there was just some bad shooting. It almost became like a contagion or something.
It was a very strange game, actually, you know. It was very hard to make sense of it when you're up there. I mean, what we were seeing was both teams transitioning the ball quite well from 21 to 21. And then after that... after that, then the teams are transitioning the ball quite well from 21 to 21, and but the pressure was so intense from both defences. That was the thing, and any loose ball, any slip up, it was being turned over straight away. But I think you're right in terms of the execution. That was the piece that was missing for both teams. They were getting themselves in the positions, and their shot selection, actually deciding when to shoot, wasn't the problem. It was just the execution under pressure and in bad conditions that was the only challenge.
This is three in a row for this Dublin team. There was a few brilliant pieces yesterday morning talking about the journey they've been on. Like Joanne Cantwell from RTE Now played in the late 90s, and at that stage she was saying, you know, we were begging for pitches to train on. We were training in a car park one time. We got, you know, a tracksuit because we got to some final or something back in the day, and we were all thrilled. And things progressed to the point where the team now seemed to be in DCU. AIG coming on board seemed to have been a big thing. Food after training, you know, balls, whistles, investment. But like, it's not, you know, this Dublin journey has only started relatively recently. People might be under the misapprehension that they've always been a force.
We haven't always been a force, and that's the reality of it. I mean, when I was playing, we lost a lot. Four All-Ireland finals, 1-1, and although we tried to make the best of everything that we had, we didn't have massive resources. We just had good people around us and sort of made the most of what we had and tried to do a bit better every year in terms of how we ran our camp. But in the last maybe 3 to 4 years, in line, I suppose, with the progression in women's sport in general, the last 3 to 4 years, the standard of, I suppose, support structure around the team has definitely improved. And you mentioned DCU being a base and better sponsors and all those little bits and pieces that make make things a little bit easier for players, I guess.
Yeah.
But I think talking to the girls last night and we were talking about some of that stuff, they don't take it for granted, which is a nice thing, because a lot of them remember the days when they didn't have all that stuff. So I think Mick is doing a very good job at making sure there's no sort of, how would you put it, sense of entitlement within the group, that they're very grateful for the improvements that have been made to them and allowed them to be better footballers.
It seems as well, Mick Bowen was talking about the year they've had, and obviously the pressure of three in a row is there and it's a big landmark to reach, but he was saying that they had a lot of injuries all year, especially up front. He was saying, we were never settled, we never got into a flow with the same six forwards across the year, and it's been that kind of a season for them.
Last year and the year before, we saw their sort of attacking six really find their stride and find a good rhythm together. And you're right, you know, they're missing Noel Healy for a good chunk of the year. Lindsay Davey was out with her back for a while. Obviously, Nicole Owen's injury. And all of that has taken its toll on that forward unit, I think. But long term, though, if you think about it, you've got Cuiva O'Connor, Jennifer Dunn, Una White, you've all these people who've come in to, and have got championship experience. Hannah O'Neill yesterday, and she got a critical goal in the second half. So maybe whether it was forced on them through injury, but the fact that they've had to bring more people onto the pitch in crucial games is really good for the development of the game.
How far clear are Dublin now, Cliona? Like, are Galway a big coming force? What's the general tapestry of things going forward? Like, will Dublin be looking at four in a row and feeling very good about that prospect? Where are we?
If we're being really critical about it, I think there are probably 3 to 4 teams who are at the top level in ladies football. So you have Dublin, you have Cork. Like, the Dublin win over Cork in the semi-final, that was a tough game. They won by 5 or 6 points in the end, but it wasn't easy by any accounts. Yeah. The game against Galway, they didn't hammer Galway out the door by any means. Mayo are generally good contenders. So there are a handful of teams who could do damage and who can compete at the top level. Mm. But I keep repeating myself, you know, that the gulf then to the next tier down, in my mind, is way too big in terms of how the game is going to progress.
Yeah, because I think with me losing the intermediate, Dublin are the only senior team in Leinster at the moment.
Yes, I really do not know what they're going to do about that. And we've talked, and the debate has been raging on the men's side of things as well, about the provincial structures and this, that and the other, and are they fit for purpose. But there's never really been a case where they've had to do something. But now the result at this weekend is going to force it. So, like, what are they going to do? Are they going to regrade teams? Are they going to abandon us? Or do you just, you know, give Dublin an Leinster title? You know, it just doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
I think the only reason we hold on to provincial championships is I don't know, it's tradition, really. I don't think you design it in the same way. It doesn't work unless everyone's at the same standard, and they're not. That's the problem.
Before you go here, interesting chat with Mór Tarasnyak-Callaghan and Mick Bowen. He was just raising an aspect of the lack of physicality in the game due to the rules, more so than due to what the players want to do. Just have a listen.
These women are strong now. They're going to the gym as often as the men. It's an awful shame sometimes they're not allowed to show their strength and use it.
Well, if you asked our group, I know they're exactly what they tell you. They would feel there's nowhere near enough contact allowed in the game. And if you look at the situation the first half, we got called 4 times, you know, inside the D area for driving through a tackle. And in the men's game, you drive through it, you offload, you get a score. Today, you did it and you were penalised on a free out. And that's nothing against the referee on the day. They're the rules of the game and it's up to us, obviously, to play with them. But my point being, on those conditions, it does make it so much more difficult.
Is this, Cliona, a long-held bugbear within the game, or is this something with the advent of the increased physicality that's becoming more of an issue for players?
I think Mór Tras is right in terms of players are getting stronger, and that's without question. I don't really agree with that, you know, you can show and use your physicality without having more contact in the game. I really do believe that. And I know what Mick is saying, like, we do have a charge in ladies football, so if I'm deemed to, like, run purposely at somebody that's charging, I'm obliged to try and go around them. And I just feel that makes for a better athletic game if evasion is rewarded rather than brute strength to drive through a tackle, as Mick called it. I just think we're promoting something that potentially is going to slow down the game. I think we should be trying to promote it being played faster and based on agility and evasion.
Okay, good to get that perspective. It's worth remarking as well, it was a record crowd again. We're kind of in the habit now of seeing record crowds on this day every year. 56,114 turned out, and in fairly miserable conditions as well. So that's a big achievement. I think that's more than actually turned up at the World Cup final in France a couple of months ago. So it's a serious number. I guess the thing is, like, we don't want this thing to become just the flagship day is the final. I know they put the semi-finals, obviously, and they got, was it somewhere between 10 and 20,000? For the semi-finals, 10,000, yeah. So I guess, like, that's the next stage. 56,000 is brilliant, and you suspect that's going to keep on growing. Semi-finals have to be the next stage anyway.
Well, you're glad that this year, I was saying, if we get about 50 again, that's good, because it's steadying, you know, and it's not just a flash in the pan. So we've had 45, we've had 50, and now we had 56. So that seems to be steady enough there. And we could have used every excuse in the book yesterday why people wouldn't come, as you said, miserable and all that stuff. But you're right in terms of growing the coverage in ladies football and developing the game. That has to start spreading earlier in the championship. Our championship is way more than one day. Mm. And we saw that, like I would have said, the two semi-final games in Croke Park were more entertaining than yesterday in terms of just for a general spectator watching ladies football. So we need to find ways to keep those expectations and raise the expectations for semi-finals and for games earlier in the championship, because people are going. The semi-final proved that, and we need to just keep banging on and keep, I suppose, giving people the opportunities to go to good quality venues to see good quality games.
Yeah, the venue is very important, and it means, you know, you're not so reliant on the final having to be a classic as an advertisement, because you could watch yesterday and dismiss the whole thing, and then you find it afterwards Dublin average 215 across the championship. There's plenty of great points being kicked.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I was talking to people today, just chit-chatting about the game, and they were saying, oh, you know, it wasn't a great day. But yeah, I saw the semis and blah, blah, blah. You know, they were able to talk about that. So it just gives a bigger narrative to the whole discussions around ladies football, which is really, really important. And I think the Croke Park thing for the semi-finals, a lot of it, you know, it's about perception, and it's about elevating it to saying, right, well, this is a worthy, you know, to double header to go and see, and it's worthy of Croke Park, and it is important. Mm. And sometimes all it takes is those perceptions to change, and momentum builds behind that.
Finally, who's your player of the year?
For me, it was Siobhan McGrath. I think she was outstanding. I think even though she had a handful yesterday, I suppose, with the goal in midfield with Anya McDonough and Louise Ward in there, she tried to move the ball as fast as she could. She was a leader in the semi-final, getting player of the match. She's around a long, long time. She used to play wing-back or centre-back, and now she's holding her own at midfield. And I think she's developed into an exceptional leader for the Dublin team.
Okay, well, listen, a very nice weekend for Dublin fans. Cliona, thanks so much for taking time. Appreciate it. Thanks for yesterday as well.
Thank you.
Cheers. Cliona O'Connor there with us. Back in a second. GAA on Off the Ball.